In week one of this series, I introduced you to Luigi, the wannabe cook. The only problem is, he doesn't know how to cook. He's a dishwasher. I mean, that's what he was hired at the restaurant to do. He wasn't brought in there to be a chef. He was just there because they needed a warm body to wash some dishes. And then last week, we introduced you to Remy the rat, which unusually, he can cook. There's only one problem. He's a rat. And we're not really keen on the idea of the rat doing the cooking. And so the two of these, if they're going to actually succeed in making the restaurant work, they're going to have to do the unthinkable. They're going to have to learn how to work together. And I hope you saw out of that clip that this learning process, it can be a little painful, can it? I mean, I don't know if you noticed, he had a little mark on his hand where the rat smacked his hand to try to keep him from pulling off the blindfold. The rat got covered in tomato and juice, and then because you know what, working together, sometimes it's going to be a little messy. It's a lot cleaner if I just do it all myself, but if I'm going to actually work with each other, then that means that there's going to be some things that have to just kind of, sometimes it's not the way we expect. You know, it's going to take a little bit of trust. What was the first thing that Remy asked Luigi to do? Don't trust what you're seeing, listen to what I'm telling you, or more importantly, listen to how I'm pulling your life one way or the other. I mean, this working together thing, it can be a little awkward, but I hope you saw by the end of the clip, man, when he pulled out the sharp knife, weren't you just a little bit worried? I mean, nothing to this point had worked, and so what's going to happen when he starts using the knife? Because I've used the knife, and I've nicked myself with a knife trying to cut vegetables or something. I couldn't imagine trying to do this blindfolded, especially with a rat pulling my hair, trying to tell me which way I'm supposed to be doing things. But by the time we get to the end of the clip, they got it worked out. I mean, Remy's pulling the strings, and Luigi's reacting, and then they get to the point that Remy's inside the hat, and it's like the little voice inside of his head telling him what to do next, and he's just kind of listening to what's going on, and he makes these wonderful dishes. And now you kind of understand the first week clip when Luigi doesn't know what his own recipe is. It's because all this time, it's because he's using the recipes of Remy the Rat. And that's important for us because we've been trying to make a dish. And that dish is none other than the church. And as we've been making this dish, we've been talking about the ingredients, and the time is going to come when we're done with the ingredients, and eventually we're going to have to turn these ingredients into a dish, but we got to collect a couple more ingredients first. And remember, we started out with flour. It is the base ingredient of the recipe of the church because it represents the leadership. Notice when I started my object lesson, who are the first people I called up here? It's the leaders of the church because the leadership decides everything. I can have all the other ingredients perfect. I can have all the other ingredients right. If I don't put this one in, then you know what? It isn't going to work. And then, well, the next ingredient that we came to was we talked about the teaching. The second people that I called up here were the teachers of the church because the teachers are the milk. They're the things that you mix into the leadership, and it kind of makes the paste turns into more like a dough, and if you keep mixing more milk into it, it becomes a batter. And this is why we now have something. Here's the incredible thing I want you to notice. When you start doing that mixing, at some point in time, you kind of lose where the leadership ends and the teaching begins, don't you? I mean, as you mix these ingredients together, you can't then go back and look at the batter and say, well, there's the eggs and there's the flour and there's the oil and there's the stuff that's in there. Eventually, as we mix everything together, you do understand. You're not going to be able to tell one from the other as we begin to move along. They kind of bleed in together. And so this morning, we're going to add in none other than eggs. And I would like to thank Gary. I had a hard time finding white eggs, but he found me these cool, these aren't real eggs, by the way, but he found me these cool little eggs to represent our eggs this morning. So we're going to talk about eggs in the recipe. And eggs are important to a recipe. Eggs provide flavor. The little yellow part, what they call the yolk of the egg, that thing is just loaded with all kind of flavor, and as it mix in, it flavors everything it touches. The white provides structure. And the two working together along with the proteins and the flour and the milk that's going on in there, the gluten in the flour and the proteins in the milk, and they mix in with these eggs, and believe it or not, that provides leavening. This is why you don't put eggs in pizza dough, because you don't want it to leaven. You want it to kind of flatten out. If you put eggs in it, it'll just kind of have a chemical reaction. It makes them very rich, and believe it or not, it actually adds to the color. So these eggs are very, very, very important. And here's the other thing. There are all kinds of flour out there. I mean, you can use whole wheat flour or white flour, or you can switch to cornmeal. There are all kinds of little things that you can use that can represent the flour. And believe it or not, there are all kinds of milk. There's buttermilk and goat's milk and cow's milk and 2% milk and skim milk, although we found out skim milk doesn't work that good in things. So there's all kinds of milk that we can use. But when it comes to eggs, basically you have brown and white. But even when you crack the shell open, you know what's inside, right? It's an egg. Maybe every now and then you'll get lucky and it'll be a double yolked egg. But for the most part, you understand what you get when you get an egg, right? You get a shell, a yolk, and a white. An egg's an egg. And so there is no substitute. It's got to be exactly what you have. If it says two eggs, then it wants two eggs. Maybe you can use a bigger one or a small one, but it requires the same thing. And so the question becomes, these are important ingredients. What is it that represents eggs in our church recipe? Well, it is the relationships in the church. If you have your copy of the Bible, you can turn to Titus chapter 2. That's where we're going to be. If you didn't bring your copy, once again, you can pull the copy right out of the pew rack. You can turn to page 1181, and you'll be exactly where I'm going to be. Actually, for those Bibles, you may have to go to 1182. You may have to turn the page one more time by the time we get to the end of the series. So here we go. This is what it says. Good relationships in the church. What do they look like? Teach the older men to be temperate, worthy of respect, self-control, sound in faith, in love and endurance. Likewise, teach the older women to be reverent in the way they live, not to be slanderers or addicted to much wine, but to teach what is good. Then they can urge the younger women to love their husbands and children and be self-controlled and pure and be busy at home, to be kind and be subjected to their husbands so that no one will malign the word of God. Similarly, encourage young men to be self-controlled in everything. Set them an example by doing what is good and teaching show integrity, seriousness, soundness of speech. They cannot be condemned, so that those who oppose you may be ashamed because they have nothing to say about us. So Paul is moving on to, last week he started talking about the idea of teaching, and this week he's going to talk about relationships. And, well, just so you know, I could have used a lot of words, but I steered clear of that word fellowship. Because that word sometimes gets overused, and when I say the word fellowship, you know what we think, right? I say fellowship, you say dinner. Okay? We usually associate the idea of fellowship with physical food sitting around a table and pecan pie and dirt and corn pudding and all those things that make us feel really happy when we eat them. So I steered away from that word fellowship. I could have also used the words unity, cooperation, or responsibility, because all of those things fit in what we're going to talk about today. Because once we get this piece down, then you know what? Our recipe changes drastically, just like mixing in the eggs. So what is a relationship? A relationship simply is defined the way in which one or two more people or organizations regard or behave toward each other. So it's where I have more than one person. That requires, you can't have a relationship with one. It doesn't exist. Okay, you can have a relationship with yourself, I guess, but that doesn't work. So the idea is I'm going to have two people, and you do understand when I have two people, that means I'm also going to have conflict automatically, because when you get two people together, you're going to have at least two opinions. So how I relate to people is how I interact with their opinions that don't always agree with me, and my opinions don't always agree with them, or my methods that they don't like, or their methods that I don't like. And so it's how we work together with one another. It's a relationship is defined as how we interact. So relationships can't be one-sided. They can't be, a relationship doesn't work that you're there and I tell you what to do. That's not a relationship, okay? That isn't how it's supposed to work. Good relationships have feedback going back and forth between the different parties, and everybody learns, and everybody is doing something, and everybody is focused on something. And the relationships in the church, well, they're no different, but here's what you need to know. The sole purpose of relationships in the church is to teach. Now, wait a minute, time out, because we read the verse in James last week when it says, many of us, we should not presume that many of us are teachers. It cautioned that you don't want to have too many teachers, and you want to make sure that you have the right kind of teachers and the right kind of people doing the teaching. So if everybody in the church is a teacher, then how can the milk work if everybody's going to teach? It means eggs and milk are the same thing. Not exactly. You see, the milk is like formal teaching. That's like cooking school. That's you come to a class and there's a set curriculum that we're going to go to, and there are certain parameters and things that we want to teach, and there's information that you want to put out there. It's kind of like going to school, okay? Yeah, I know all the kids are like, yeah, we do that all week. Let's not do that now. But that's the idea of the milk. The milk is like cooking school. The eggs are more like making cookies. They're informal teaching. You know how you get together and, you know, the kids want something and it's been snowing outside and they're about to drive you crazy and you're trying to figure out something to do. And the something to do is always, let's make cookies. The kids like this idea because at the end of it, there are cookies. The parents like this because it consumes time. But as you're making the cookies and you're sitting there and you're putting in the ingredients and you sit there and you talk with one another, you get very good learning experiences as you're making cookies, right? Because that's a form of teaching, and this is the kind of teaching that the eggs represent, because the idea is informal teaching is not the teaching in a classroom concept. It's sharing life experiences. That's the eggs of the church. The eggs of the church is the idea that I am going to share my life experiences with the people. Oh, now do you understand the communion meditation? You see, when we were here at the table, we had all different ages, and the idea is not for everybody to be crowded around the table grabbing communion at the same time. The idea would be for it to be shared down the line by sharing our life experiences. Now, remember, we're talking about must-haves. We're not talking about sugar. We're not talking about salt. We're not talking about butter. We're not talking about chocolate drops. We're talking about the ingredients of the church that you have to have, and if you're missing any of these ingredients, then it doesn't work. A lot of times we try to figure out what's the most important part of the church. Well, what's the most important part of your body? The brain or the heart? Really? Which one would you be willing to get rid of? Neither. Why? Because one can't function without the other, right? Take away the brain, the heart doesn't beat. Take away the heart, and there's no oxygen for the brain, and it dies. You understand, you got to have both. Both parts, that's a no-win question. You got to have both. Well, these are no-wins. If we don't have all of these, then none of these work. I can have the world's best leadership, but if I don't have the teaching to go with it, the leaders don't matter. I can have the world's best teaching, but if I don't have leaders to go ahead and kind of put everything together, then you know what, it's not going to work. And this idea of eggs, these aren't optional. These aren't things that we can look at and say, well, you know, we don't really like that part of the church, so we're going to leave it out, because these are must-haves in the church. And this ingredient, if you're missing it, I want to give you the symptom that you're missing it. If you are involved in church and the churches have trouble holding on to the generations behind them, in other words, we keep losing our youth, you understand what we're missing, right? We're missing the eggs from the recipe. We've got maybe the best flour in the universe, and we've got maybe the best teaching in the world, the milk in the universe, and maybe we even got the best oil. But if you're missing this, then what's going to happen as your youth get older, when they become adults? They're just going to kind of go away. And then you have to keep replacing the youth with new youth, because you can't hold on to your own youth because of the fact that you're missing something. You're missing an ingredient. And this is the ingredient that you're missing. So that tells you this is an important ingredient, because this is about our future. This is about how do we go about reaching into the lives of those that are behind us in the line. How do I get the eggs involved in the church? Well, let's take a look at Paul's lesson to Titus. And I just want to let you know, Paul acknowledges there are age differences. Now, I notice he did not use the word old, okay? He said older. So now, I have a question. In the line that I have formed here, who was older? Everybody was older than somebody except for Morgan, right? So that means if there's anybody in the building that's younger than you, then you are older. Bah, but at the same time, if there's anybody in the building that is older than you, you are also younger. You see how this works? So Paul says, guess what, folks? There's always going to be someone older than you, and hopefully there's always going to be someone younger than you. So that means you fit in both categories for the most part at the same time, unless you happen to be the oldest person in the church. And if you're the oldest person in the church, then guess what? You got the most responsibility. This verse applies to you. And if you're the youngest person in the church, then, well, you don't have the most responsibility as far as what to do. But you know what? There should be a lot of people interested in your life. See, there is a lesson here that it talks about age differences. If they're an older man, and notice also he has gender differences in there too. There are going to be men and women. There are lessons for different kind of things. And what they're interested in is different lessons for different phases of life. Did you pay attention to what Paul told him to teach? Let me give you the summary. He says all the lessons were about godly life. So how to live a godly life, how to go out there and do that. That's what the lessons were supposed to be about. Cater to where you were in life. Notice they weren't trying to teach the older women the same thing they were trying to teach the younger women. There were different lessons based on where you were in life. Older, the main lessons were, be the good example. That's important. So you're supposed to be the cookie cutters. You're supposed to be where we're putting the dough. We're supposed to be able to look at the older life and say, make yourself look like them. And to the younger, it was all about becoming the good example. In other words, having people out there that you could pattern your life after and make yourself like them so that you have something. You know, I was a youth minister for 17 years, and the best thing I ever learned as a youth minister, teenagers are not looking for somebody to be like them. They're looking for somebody they can be like. Because you know what? They already got lots of people that can be like them. They're called other teenagers. They're called peers. They're not necessarily looking for somebody that can be cool. They're looking for somebody that can teach them about life. Somebody that can give them something in their life that will make their life work better. They're looking for the eggs in the recipe. That's the successful relationships in the church. And just so you know, we're not just talking about teaching somebody about Old Testament heroes or teaching somebody the facts in the Bible. We're not talking about teaching trivia here. No, these lessons were much more. Just read back through that list in Titus chapter 2 that we got. And look, they said, hey, let's teach them about marriage. Let's teach them about parenting. They even went so far as to say, let's teach them about the addiction issue that's out there. Let's have lessons on that. Let's talk about gossip and the tongue. Let's talk about character and integrity. These are not Bible lessons. These are what? These are life lessons. These are things that don't just make me a better Christian, they make me a better person. And Paul is laying it out there to Titus and say, guess what? This is what your church should be teaching the younger. This is what you should be teaching the people behind you, not just about how to quote a scripture, but how to live the scripture in your everyday life. And here's the deal. 17 years doing this, and when you do this, I will tell you something. The kids eat this up. They'll come back for seconds and thirds and fourths, and they'll keep coming and keep coming, and they'll keep coming because you're giving them something they can apply to their life every single day. And Paul says, you know what? Older in the church, it's your responsibility. Really? Yeah. So that means chronologically, if you can think of anybody else in the church that's younger than you, you have a responsibility to be involved in their life. Oh, that sounds a little difficult. Yeah, that's called eggs in the recipe. I also taught them something about being a good testimony. By the way, you might want to hang on to that word. I'm guaranteeing you might see it very shortly. Being a good testimony. And then they got into the how to live a temperate life, how to live a reverent life, how to live an encouraging life, how to have sound faith and how to know that your sound faith is actually faith that will lead you to a relationship with Christ, how to have some self-control. These are the lessons that Paul was telling Titus to teach. These were the things that he was putting out there saying, you teach these things, you'll change their lives. You'll impact them like you've never impacted anybody before. They don't need to know exactly chapter and verse of everything that's out there. Yeah, you got to give them enough of the practical Bible lesson so they can find the answers for themselves eventually. But understand what we're talking about. We're talking about teaching life lessons that will impact people's lives, not as they're in this building, but as they go out there into that world. You want to change a world? Change a young heart. Because you know what? Teenagers they think they're invincible. They do. I know, I've got one, and I was one, and I've been around them. They think they're invincible. They can do anything. And you change their life, and you get their heart to tick for God, you'll change the world. And it won't take long to do it. So here's what you need to know about this. They were not interested in teaching Bible facts, but indeed they were interested in teaching nothing more than life application. If you teach a lesson and nobody knows what to do with it after you've taught it, what good is it? Think about that. If you teach a lesson and at the end of the lesson you're all done and nobody knows what to do with it, then what good is the lesson? I mean, let's face it, we go to school when we're kids and we have to take math, and what's one of the first things we talk about? Well, when I grow up, I'm going to be this. What on earth am I ever going to do with math? I mean, why do I need to know that A squared plus B squared equals C squared? I'm not going to build bridges for a living. I don't care. You know, I'm going to go do this. It doesn't require math. You understand? Young hearts and young minds want to have something that I can take out and I can apply today. They're not interested in applying it 50 years down the road or 20 years down the road. You know what? 20 minutes down the road. They want to know, what can I do with what you're teaching me now? Because they're in the now kind of people. And you know what? That's how God built them. And it's time for us to understand, when we teach, life application. What are you going to do with it? How can I take what you've given me and go out there and put it to work in my life? The older you are, the more responsible you are to relate. Now, I want you to understand, Paul basically takes it right to the older people in the church. He tells them, you know what? It's up to you to figure out how to get your message across to them, not the other way around. They're not supposed to be learning how to speak your language. You have the responsibility to speak theirs, because it's your job to get them to listen. Here's the thing. If they're not listening, the problem isn't them. The problem is you're not teaching in the way they can understand. If they're not listening, if people aren't listening, it's because you're speaking things that mean nothing to them. And so why on earth do I want to listen when it sounds like Charlie Brown speak? Wah, 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 wah. You know, that's a lot of times kids hear. And they want us to understand, the older you are, the more responsibility you have to learn how to speak their language. The more opportunity you have to change what you're doing so that you can reach a life. He throws it right there on the older. He doesn't say, younger, get your head in line so that you can understand what the older is saying. What does it say, older? Learn to teach the younger. Learn their language. Learn their forms of communication. Learn what they find important, because what they find important is what you're going to be using to teach a lesson to them. Because if it's not important to them, then they ain't listening. And I'm telling you that flat out from experience. If you can't make it important, if you can't make it relevant, you've got about 15 minutes to get their attention. And after that, you're done. Because they've moved on to something else. Right off the bat, it focused on getting the older active in the younger's lives and not the other way around. It isn't about teaching them how to conform to our image. It's about us learning how to get active in their life. Go out to what they like to do. They like to play ball. Learn to watch ball games. They like to run track. Go watch them run track. You know, they like to play video games. Learn to play a video game. Whatever it will that lets you interact into their life, Paul is telling the older, the first thing you've got to do is get their attention. And I think we're missing this ingredient sometimes in our churches. We've forgotten this fact that our job, number one, is to get their attention, because until we get their attention, they're never going to listen. And you know what? I don't blame them. Because I was a teenager at one point. And it, you know what? Although that's been quite a few years ago, I remember. You didn't interest me. I didn't listen to you. I moved on. Because there's a lot of voices in my head. And there's a lot of things I can listen to. And I'll just find the next thing that's out there for me. The older you are in your faith, the more active you should be in the church. Now, when I make that statement, I'm not saying the more time you should spend at the church building. That's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying that means the more serving that you should be doing in the church. That means if you're older in the church, you should be teaching a Sunday school class, and you should be serving communion, and you should be up here singing, and you should be doing the choir, and you should be there for it. No, we're not talking about punching the clock, okay? I don't care about punching the clock. This is what I'm talking about. The older you are in your faith, the more active you should be in the church, and the church isn't the building. Who's the church? The people. So the older you are in faith, then the more relationships you should have in the church that you should be feeding your wisdom into. Don't we have that kind of backwards? The older I am in faith, the longer I've been here, so the more entitled I am to my spot in the sanctuary, so that I can sit, and then you need to learn how to work around me because I've got seniority. You understand there's no seniority in this. There's no seniority in the eggs. Because guess what? The eggs are three parts. The shell, the yolk, and the white. What's the most important part? All three. Take away the shell and, well, the egg doesn't work. Take away the yolk, it doesn't do what it's supposed to. Take away the white. You've got to have all three parts. And so the idea here is that Paul is telling Titus, when you sit down and you talk to people, make them understand. If you're going to get mature, then you're going to get involved. If you're going to be immature, you're going to sit in your seat. Man, that's kind of harsh, isn't it? Paul's taking it to them. I mean, this is what he's telling Titus. Now remember who Titus is. Titus is the minister of the church. And he is telling the minister of the church, this is the message I want you to give to the congregation. I wonder how long he was the minister of the church. I mean, you preach that message too often, and they might find a cross for you somewhere. I mean, this is a dangerous message. I mean, think about it this way. We think the Bible is God's word. That's what we believe, right? Therefore, if the Bible tells me to do it, and I refuse to do it, we call that what? Sin, right? The book of Titus is in the Bible, correct? And the Bible clearly, and Titus clearly says that the older should be involved in the younger's life, right? So that means if they refuse to do so, where does that put it? See how important Titus makes this? It's all about the eggs. It's all about getting involved. See, I want you to pay special note to the verbs. They're important. Okay? When Titus talks to the older, what did he tell Titus to do? What was the verb? Teach. You know why he uses that word? Because he's assuming that he's dealing with a mature people, and he said, here's what you do, Titus. You set them down, and you say, this is the way it has to work. And you spell it out for them. And then you just expect them to do it. But I want you to see something very important. When he starts talking about the younger ones, his verbs change. He uses the words urge and encourage. Now, what's the difference between those two words? Because there's no lesson there. It means that I'm supposed to urge and encourage by taking my life and getting involved in their life, and then eventually as I'm involved in their life, and eventually they start looking at my life, and they say, how did you deal with this when you were younger? Now you've got their attention. Now, I know a lot of people say, well, I'm not really a kid person. Notice the definition of the word. I didn't say adult and child. I didn't say adult and kid. I didn't say adult and nursery. The term is older and younger. So that means if you're older, that means chronologically there's somebody that's younger than you, then you have a responsibility to the people that are younger than you. I do realize not everybody's going to run out and say, I want to sit nursery next week. I'd love to have that problem, but we're not going to have that problem. I also understand that there are going to be people that just, they don't get it. That's okay. You understand that this isn't something that I made up. This is the exact instructions that Paul gave Titus. And he says that we the older, so that makes me, I'm 50. No, I turned 50 this week. So I'm 50, so that means anyone that is 49 and down is my younger. They're the people I should be pouring my life into. Now, what about the people that are 51 and up? Well, the assumption is they probably know more than me, hopefully. And they should be the ones that are pouring their life into me. And so we have a relationship going back and forth where we are like Remy and the rat. Remy and Luigi the rat. They were working together. They were using what God had given them to make the best dish available to everybody. See, it's all about old-fashioned eggs. Hey, didn't we just talk about this when we were back at the bat cage? You know, when we talked about being blind as a bat and whether the eggs plus the chicken, you know, that makes a good church, that makes a good vision. Here's the thing about eggs and a recipe. I'm going to use an egg in a recipe. This is how I do it, right? So I've got my bowl. And let me take my things out here. I've got my bowl, and I just take my egg, and I'm ready to go, right? What's wrong? Oh, so you're telling me in order to use this egg, I have to crack it open. Because I'm not really interested in the shell. I'm interested in, aren't you glad it's empty at this point? I'm not interested in the hard shell. As a matter of fact, what am I going to do with the hard shell? I'm going to throw that away. Unless I boil it, then I'm going to peel it, but I'm still going to eventually throw it away. I'm not going to consume the shell. I'm going to crack it open. So I just dump it in, and then I'm all ready to go, right? I just dump the liquid in, and it's all ready to go. I'm ready to go with what I want to do. That's not what you do. What's the next thing you do once you crack an egg open and you dump it in? We saw the, yeah, it has to be mixed in. Just like the milk, just like the flour, eventually we have to take the relationships in the church and mix it all together so that I can't tell where one begins and the other ends. In other words, my leadership flows into my teaching, and my teaching flows into my relationships, and my relationships flow back into my leadership, and around and around and around to go, and what we get is one creamy batter that we can make something with. See, no eggs. What you get is a flat finished product. I have a recipe that I make. It's called corn pudding. And it's my mom's recipe. I have no idea where she got it from. But the first time I made it, the recipe calls for 3 eggs. And I was short the first time I made it. You know, I was younger, and I went to the refrigerator, and there were only 2 eggs. I thought, no big deal. I mean, it's only an egg, right? You know, when you cook corn pudding, and it starts in the bottom of the pan, it's kind of flat, and as it cooks, it begins to rise. Would you know what the first one I made looked like? It was sunk right in the middle. And all I was missing was 1 out of 3 eggs. I mean, I did put 2 in there, but it sunk right in the middle. Because if I don't put the eggs in, then it doesn't ever rise. See, no relationships equals a broken church. It's not a place where this line works anymore. Because as I take Christ from here and I pass it back and pass it back, how far will it go? The very first person that line decided, not me, I'm going to keep it for myself. You realize what they've done, right? They've cut the entire line behind them off. The first person that becomes self-centered and says, I'm going to hold on to this for myself because it's mine and it's important to me. You understand, everybody else in that line would starve to death. Because the idea is that first person takes it and they hand it and the next person and the next person and the next person until we get all the way back to the youngest there. That's the way this was designed to work. That's what the recipe calls for. Here's the question. Is that what you're willing to do? Oh, wait a minute now. That's a little different question, isn't it? I mean, it's okay to have it written on the recipe card to say, do this. But now, you understand. This is what the recipe says. And if we don't do what the recipe says, then we can probably expect that ours won't turn out like theirs. Right? We're going to end up with something that maybe is sort of like it, but it's going to be kind of sunk in the middle. So this morning, I want to ask you to ponder this thought. Who is sitting here this morning that you could pour your life into? Now, I don't have to go the other way, because the idea is if everybody took that message, then there would be nobody without somebody pouring their life into somebody. unless you're the oldest person in the church, and trust me, you'll get a lot more poured back in when the youth turn back around. It happens. Again, I got experience on my side. I can tell you exactly how it works. So I want you to start thinking this morning. Do you have any eggs? Something that you can pass down to the people that are behind you, not because they're lesser than you, just because they got here second. They're just a little younger than you. They got some life learning to do, and you know what? You got all the richness you can share because you've already been where they're going to be. You've already experienced what they've got going for them. And you know what? You already know the pitfalls. Share the information in a way that they can understand it. We're going to do a time of decision, and maybe you're here this morning, and you know what? You don't have the relationship. That relationship is real simple. Part of the church is a relationship with Christ. And maybe you've never accepted as your personal Lord and Savior. Maybe you've never followed him in baptism. I don't know where you are in your life, but this morning, if you don't have that main relationship, let me encourage you to take this time of decision and then make that relationship essential in your life. If you've done that, then you know your challenge. You know what you have to do. Jesus is what he says. He says, take it and pass it on. Pass it on to people that are in need of growing up. And maybe this time of decision is where for you to start thinking about, who is that person? Who has God called me to reach into their life? And trust me, it's going to be just like Luigi and the rat. It's going to be a little messy, a little painful, a little awkward. Sometimes you won't know what you're doing. But in the end, if you do it long enough, man, the dish we'll be able to make, it'll be phenomenal. Would you please stand? We're going to pray, and then we're going to sing.